Mini episode 1715 of the FDH Lounge is brought to you by Sportsology, delivering unconventional columns and webcasts about sports, TV, music, movies, and more. Follow them on the web at sportsology.com.
The FDH Lounge. You want to schedule your life around it.
A long time ago, on a gloomy, wet Cleveland spring night, two men stand alone amidst the late night drizzle. Their voices echo across the vacant station parking lot as they debate the merits of the great American radio show that have been missing for far too long. On that night, an idea was born. That idea became the FDH Lounge. Welcome to the FDH Lounge.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to mini episode 1715 of the FDH Lounge. You have with you here today two original FDH Lounge dignitaries, Rick Morris and Chris Galloway, and this is the fourth incarnation of something that we have been a part of every time we've done this. It's the February 29th time capsule. We started it in 2012, and we went through, and that one was very notable because at that time, when we were talking about predictions for the next 4 years, Chris actually was talking about 3D printing at a time when it was certainly earlier than most folks were talking about it. And you get to hear me and Nate Noy being flabbergasted in real time. Like, what is this? We're trying to make sense of what he's talking about. And so I like to think I've followed in that footsteps ever since, going through making predictions for the next 4 years for things that will happen. We did actually have a competition as far as the scores of the parts of this that were true or false on what would happen, as opposed to just some general opinions in other areas. Last time out, the winner, Nate Noy, with 5.5 points. From there, edging Steve Cervillo with 4.5, Chris Galloway with 4 points. I had 3.5 points, 3 points apiece to Ron Glasnap and Johnny Adams, 3 points also for our good friend Tim Trammell, who was a part of it, and 2 points for our friend, the late, great Dave Adams. And this, I guess, would have been the last competition he was a part of because he could have gotten a point or a half point had the 49ers won the Super Bowl this time around. So Dave missed out on getting a half point there, but Dave is on to bigger and better things cosmically these days. But anyways, somebody who is still here on this mortal coil with me, my great friend of a couple of decades here, Chris Galloway, our futurist in the FDH Lounge. Chris, great to have you on as we go through our time capsule for this February 29th.
I love the fact that you've got us as friends for a couple of decades. I'm like, you mean for over 30 years?
I'm trying not to age us here, pal.
We're way past a couple decades.
Yes, I was trying not to age you.
It's great to be here. It's great to be here. I'm sorry that Dave cannot be a part of this next iteration. We obviously all hold his memory fondly, those of us associated with this program.
Yes, thank you. Well, you know, and I put in mind of that great line from The League, which was an epic, epic sitcom. It's still there on Hulu if anybody wants to check it out. The guys that were in the Fantasy Football League together. And there was one episode where a guy who gets hit by a bus visits them as a ghost, and he's talking about what it's like now, and he's talking about the football league that he's in. Yeah, I'm in a 12-team keeper league now with the Ultimate Warrior and Mother Teresa. So that's how I like to think of Dave these days.
Hey, you don't know. I mean, you don't know. You don't know who's in that league.
Yes, exactly. He is, you know, we call ourselves dignitaries in the FDH Lounge here, but he might be playing with some real dignitaries here, certainly. And, you know, it's a nod to just how timeless this is when we go and we do this every 4 years, and you certainly never know what's going to happen in the 4 years, although we try to forecast as best we can. I did mention to you off air, Chris, before we started here, that when I went through to score this thing just recently from the last 4 years, I remembered some of it, but I was taken aback at the magnitude of it, of what it's a time capsule in a very real sense. Last time, more than any of the other times we've ever done it, and maybe more than anything we'll ever do again, as far as a snapshot of a moment in time. We're recording this live to tape February 27th here. to be posted on the 29th. We recorded it on February 27th back then as well. And we were just a little bit of a nod, giving a little bit of a nod to COVID-19. Like, we're hearing some stuff and it's sweeping Italy, and like, we don't know how it's going to affect the stuff. So if you want to hear people who know something is coming and are trying to make sense of it, but really can't because they have no idea. But I mean, listening to us talk about it, like, that's a moment frozen in time. And that is some audio that is very precious indeed, just to hear people grappling with what they don't know, but are trying to make sense of.
I feel like I want to definitely, now that you've mentioned that, go back and take a listen to that. Mm-hmm. Because it probably is quite interesting to listen, you know, with everything in the rearview mirror now.
Yeah.
You know, what our takes and what our thoughts were at the time and how much we didn't know what was coming, right? You know,
yeah.
Like you said, grappling with and trying to guess, what does this mean? What is happening? Where is this taking us? I don't think any of us guessed that, you know, 3 weeks later, like, they would shut down the whole state of Ohio.
No.
But we clearly, you know, as you had mentioned to me off air, I had already been part of meetings with our county government, talking about possibilities and having some early meetings to talk about some actions that we might take. And, you know, if this occurs, then this, and what about X and Y? So that was it was right about those first couple meetings I'd had were right about that time. My first actual communique with anyone in the county was earlier in February, where I sent out a communique asking everyone to get all their accesses up to date vis-a-vis their employees in the event we had to do remote access in the event of emergency, asking them to update, you know, where, you know, to have at least one laptop per department, asking them to update their dial-in credentials, those types of things. And I also remember being mostly ignored by most of the county. And then, of course, when everything hit and everything shut down, the flurry of calls and emails saying, hey, I need to figure out, like, remote access for my whole team. And going, you should have probably heeded my email from 6 weeks ago when I strongly urged everyone to take a moment and figure out their entire remote access strategy, and you all ignored it, and here we are. So it's funny. Yeah. I can go back and find that email of me advising folks, and this is probably early mid-February, going, I think you need to be thinking about it.
Yeah, well, and I'll tell you, and a thing where if I was ever to point to one of the reasons that I am smarter than the average person is that I certainly know who to listen to. So I remember after we taped that night, I remember you cluing me into some of this stuff and going, oh, wow, there's like local governments that are already envisioning this kind of stuff. I remember sending an email to my board here at the HOA, like, hey, guys, might want to get out in front of this. My pal told me from the next county over, the local county government's looking at this kind of stuff. So I listened to you, Chris, and certainly everybody should have.
Well, that makes you better than most of the department heads and elected officials I serve with. So congratulations, Rick.
Thank you. Better than most of my association also, although that's a very low bar. But it is a high bar to be somebody who can be very accurate in the predictions here with this show, with this competition that we go through. So we're going to take a look at these here. We have less of the surveys this time around. Nate Noy, fellow original FDH Lounge dignitary, he only had time to get to some of the opinion questions later on. So on the ones that are going to be true or false, the ones that we score, we have our two surveys, and we have a fellow longtime FDH Lounge dignitary, Ron Glasnap, with his perspective. And so we start with this one.
I am definitely interested in Ron's perspective. So I look forward to hearing it.
It's different than mine in a number of ways. I think it's different than yours. We've covered a lot of variety, I think, just from giving a quick glimpse to these things here. The first one, who will be the teams in the NFL, NBA, MLB, NHL, college football, and college hoops who will win more than one championship between February 29th, 2024, and 2028. And in his case, he says the Kansas City Chiefs. That's very low-hanging fruit. You're going to like this one. He says Boston Bruins. I don't know why, given the sell-by date of a lot of the talent on that team. Not Pasta, but a lot of the other guys. And South Carolina for women's hoops. We didn't put that one in there, but I'll give him that. He can do women's hoops. I wasn't about to. But for me, I subscribe to the Michael Scott theory of you miss 100% of the shots you don't take. So I gave an opinion for each of these ones here. Kansas City Chiefs, Atlanta Braves, Denver Nuggets, Georgia Bulldogs in football, UConn in men's basketball, and the New Jersey Devils in the NHL. And, Chris, you said the only one you were going with was the Boston Celtics.
Yeah, I believe that I should get points when the time comes for saying none. I think that's just as valid as taking the shot. My okay. saying there won't be one in the NHL and there won't be one in the NFL, a repeat in the next 4 years. I ought to get credit for that.
So let's just clarify. So it wasn't that like, I don't know if any of them will or not. You're drawing a line and you're saying nobody else is going to win two in 4 years.
And none of the sports that you outlined in the question, no team will win more than one other than the Boston Celtics.
Well, as somebody who's had quite a belly full of the Kansas City Chiefs right about now, I find that comforting if you're right, but very surprising. And also, the only one you're picking is the NBA, and it's not the Denver Nuggets. Props for the balls on those ones, bro.
I consider the Nuggets, but here's the thing I believe. I mean, I think that Jason Tatum is going to win one.
Okay.
And my question I kind of rattled in my head was, can he win a second, right? Like, I think okay. the Nuggets will win one. I think the Nuggets will win one in the next 4 years. And maybe okay. it's this year or next year. But I also think the Celtics will. And so then it came down to, okay, which one, like, can Tatum get two in 4 years? I think yes. That's why I went with it.
Okay. All right. Very interesting. And we shall see how that plays out.
Like I don't think there's going to be a repeat in the NHL. I don't think there's going to be a repeat in college football. Not with Saban out. I don't think there's not in MLB. I'm not buying any of it. I think the next 4 years we're going to see a lot of variety, which will make everybody happy.
Well, just to be devil's advocate, isn't it sort of prisoner of the moment in terms of the last 3 to 4 months, or maybe less than that? To say that Georgia is the new Alabama is not a valid take? One would think that with Nick Saban being out of there and Georgia's success going into that SEC championship game, that the road might be more clear for them, no?
I think it is, but I think the new playoff format screams for an upset here and there and a little bit harder path to a national championship.
Okay. Yeah, that is going to affect things as well, too. This will be the first time out that the college football playoff in the 12-team form has factored into our predictions. As I say, with somewhat of a sad note in my face, as the original promoter of the plus-one format, which is now going by the boards. So for the second one here,
as the guy who's been wrong all along.
I threw you the fat softball over the plate. I was just waiting for that there. So I know we have always agreed to disagree on that one here. So, you know, we'll see. When a 7-5 team makes the playoffs, you can tell me how much the regular season still matters. So, you know, we shall see on that. But the next one here, who will be the players in the PGA, men's and women's tennis, who will win the most major championships, and who, if anyone, will win more than one season title in NASCAR? Ron Glasnap says Justin Thomas, no idea, in tennis, and Kyle Larson for NASCAR. I, Rick Morris, say Carlos Alcaraz in tennis, Iga Swiatek in tennis, Kyle Larson in NASCAR, and Scottie Scheffler in the PGA. All of those heavily chalk-tastic picks. You did not go with a guess on these ones, Chris.
Yeah, I got to be honest. My first thought when I read that question was, that's the second question he's asking me, like women's tennis. I mean, why didn't you have Northern Canadian curling in there? WNBA, girls, women's Division III softball. I mean, here's my
women's
thing about any of those.
We grew up on women's.
Nobody gives a shit right now. My God. Men's tennis is down. Men's tennis is down. The PGA is kind of a mess right now with the LIV Golf. And I mean, it's, you know, no Tiger. I honestly, and NASCAR, do they still even race? I mean,
yeah.
Is there anything even going on with NASCAR? I mean, dear Lord, I as a dignitary, I want to, like, for once, just, you know, use my clout to say a pox upon that entire question.
Yeah. Okay. All right. Well, there are people that are interested in these things here, and there are those of us who are of course, charter members of the FantasyDraftHelp.com golf and tennis fantasy expert leagues here that are always posted on the site every year. So we are certainly keenly attuned to these things. I always say, by the way, just to troll my dad, I always refer to Iga Świątek as Cousin Iga, just to hear him say, "You don't know that," because we do have a lot of relatives in Poland with the last name of Świątek. So I'm just making that assumption that we're related somehow. So I
well,
like
you probably
so.
Are. I mean, mitochondrial DNA would tell me that.
Yeah, exactly. Let's get 23andMe on the case, huh? That should solve this up for everybody. I'll submit a sample, and we just got to get one from her. I'll write to her manager. So the next one that we have here, who will be the lead movie star in the biggest grossing film? Ron Glasnap says Chris Pratt. I, Rick Morris, say Sam Worthington, figuring it'll be an Avatar movie. And you, Chris Galloway, say Daisy Ridley, obviously assuming another Star Wars movie.
Yeah, I thought about it. And this is, I mean, is this a category that any of us have ever gotten right?
I don't think so.
I don't recall any of us ever being right about this.
I don't think so either. But here's the funny thing, and going back through past results, that Ron and then somebody else, I don't remember which time and who the other person was, but somebody answered the same thing in 2016 and 2020, Sam Worthington, because the next Avatar movie will probably come out now. And whoever said it in 2020 was correct, but Sam Worthington was not the highest grossing star.
Yeah, it was, who was it? It was, It was, well, wasn't it one of your boys from Akron there?
Not Anthony and Matt Patrone.
I think it was Anthony.
Not the Black Keys.
I think it was Anthony.
Not the Black Keys. I don't know them personally. Who else are we talking about from Akron?
No, I think it was Anthony Patrone was the one who went to the mat for Worthington. I'm pretty sure. Because I think I recall, like, a whole rant about Avatar, when it comes out, it's going to be huge.
Oh,
I'm pretty sure it was Patron.
I thought you were saying one of the biggest grossing movie star actors was from Akron. I was going to say, I don't think so. I really don't.
No. Anthony, I was saying your Anthony guess. David I was now. Trying to – I was
okay.
guessing who it was in our group.
Oh,
it was. I think it was Anthony.
I think it was Anthony. I think it was. Okay. Well, yeah, I mean, this is always, I mean, we're just throwing a dart at the wall on a lot of these ones, but this one in particular, you're not wrong about that. This is one of the harder ones to get right. I will tell
you.
Yeah,
and again, I did just go with Daisy Ridley because I had heard that they were re-inking her for another Star Wars, and I thought, okay, if they roll a new Star Wars out, and if it's halfway decent, it's going to rack up a ton of, you know, a huge box office.
Yeah.
So would it be the biggest grossing film? I don't know, right? Because I have no idea what's coming down the pike, but it seemed to me like that was a pretty decent bet.
Well, and what's funny is, like, how much, again, we're all kind of throwing a dart at the wall, especially here, because for Ron, when I saw him Saturday night at our Texas Hold'em event, the one where I sent you the text that so greatly befuddled you, I asked him, I said, Chris Pratt, what's he going to be in? And he didn't know for sure. He's just like, I think he's probably going to be in a blockbuster that's going to register. I'm like, okay, well, he's on the short list of guys where it's plausible, definitely.
Well, I think that's definitely the case. Yeah, I mean, Chris Pratt would be on my, if you gave me 10 shots at it, he'd be one of my 10.
Absolutely. But it was funny because I was like, oh, are they doing another dinosaur movie or whatever? Like, no, he didn't even have anything specifically in mind. So
they are going to do a new dinosaur movie.
Are they?
I read somewhere that they're going to basically reboot the whole thing, and I don't know that he's going to be in it. They're going to reboot the whole thing, like as if like I read. And we'll see if this proves to be true, that they're going to redo Jurassic Park like the original and like start over. Like, hey, look, I'm a crazy scientist with this island, and I'm gonna like I heard they're going to redo the whole thing, like hit the reboot on it.
Oh, interesting. Okay. Well, that would be a possibility right there. The next category, I mean, this is basically the lowest hanging fruit you could ask for right now. Sell the most albums. And we all said Taylor Swift. I'll just say for myself and for Ron, not because we're rooting for it, but just because, you know, it's, you know, who do you think is going to make it? Not who do you think would be necessarily the most deserving. So. This is one where you really couldn't go another way.
No, I mean, I have no data point to tell me there's going to be somebody else, right? She's nearing Beatles territory in terms of global phenomena and everything else. So, you know, there's no way you can bet against her.
The question is,
after this tour, does she take a few years off and we don't get a new album, right? Like, that would be the risk. Because she's been re-releasing old albums after they sold her masters. She's on tour. She's doing like a two, three year tour. Is she wiped out and she's literally made billions at that point? It might be 3 years before we see another album, right? So it's like we got a 4 year window. Maybe she doesn't start selling albums until year four. Shoot, somebody else might actually surpass her because you know, just the timeline on her work may not work on the timeline.
Well, that's possible, but I mean, you know, she's pretty relentless at milking the teats of her paying public. So, I mean, I don't see her going that long without releasing albums. But yeah, you raise an interesting possibility, though. But you know, like I said, it's funny. You say Beatles, I've said Elvis, and it's also a thing too. I mean, the thing with her and Kelsey that for as much as sports purists like myself stick our fingers down our throats at having to hear about it on a football broadcast, I mean, I have compared it. It is sort of like the modern thing of DiMaggio and Monroe, essentially. I don't think there's anything else like that you could really compare that to as far as the magnitude in the public eye of the two individuals.
Yeah, let's see if they last longer than the 6 months that DiMaggio and Monroe lasted.
Well, they're right about at that point now, probably, so we shall see. We'll see what comes out of the Australian thing here, this tour, and some of the stuff that's happening there. This is where things start to get spicy. This is another one where we're almost never right on who will be the U.S. president and vice president. These are separate predictions, but I'm going to mention them together. Ron says, and I mean, and this is, I don't know if this is a brokered convention, picking them separately. He says Nikki Haley and Tucker Carlson. So there's that. I'm going the most missionary position out of everybody in the bunch here. I am saying Donald Trump, Tim Scott. That is my prediction. And your prediction, I guess this would be, again, a brokered convention, Gavin Newsom and Gretchen Whitmer.
Yeah, I'm going, I went crazy. I almost always do on this question.
Sure, sure.
And I went crazy, Ivan. Here's my scenario. The Biden ego and team won't get him to step down, okay? But they know they have a huge problem. My prediction is the Democratic convention comes, and he dumps Harris from the ticket. He puts Newsom on. Biden then wins with Newsom because enough people are then satisfied that, well, if the old man croaks or loses enough of his marbles and he's got to go, at least there's somebody in the VP slot that we trust or we think can run the country, right?
Okay.
That propels him to victory in this November, the Biden-Newsom ticket. Then he can't get through the term. He resigns due to health. Newsom becomes president and appoints a la Ford Whitmer as his vice president. And that's how we get to February 29th of 2028 with President Newsom and Vice President Whitmer. So another Michigan, just like Ford.
Wow.
You know, Michigan. And that's how we get a Michigan politician put in as vice president when a vice president gets elevated. That's my wild ass prediction. How's that?
I mean, you just painted a very interesting picture there. And again, who among us can say what is plausible and implausible in the era that we live in? And again, you've gotten weird with a couple of your picks over a period of time, so have a couple other people. But it's one of those things where I look at it like, again, three of the four time capsules we've done have been in the Donald Trump era. So getting weird with it is just being sort of equivalent to what the times are, right? I mean, you don't know what's going to happen. Ever since the Trump era started in 2015, 2016, trying to see too far down the road has been pretty difficult. So, you know, I kind of get that. The one thing
it's hard, and again, I'm banking the first domino on the Biden team realizing they're not able to push the old man out, but they realize they need a more vibrant VP or they have no shot of winning. And so rather than pushing the old man out and starting all over with the convention, they try to split the baby and replace Harris, who's beyond weak. And then they want to get in a stronger VP so that he can win. That's my whole theory behind it.
Okay. Well, I will say, and again, as we're going live to tape February 27th here, recording for the 29th when this will be posted. So as we're recording this, theoretically 48 hours left, anything can happen. But I kind of doubt this will happen. My friend Tim Trammell's prediction from last time out that the combination would be Donald Trump Jr. and Jim Jordan. Yeah, I don't think we're going to get there. But that will always be the standard.
He's running out of time on that one.
Yeah, that'll always meet the standard for crazy-ass predictions that we've had here. That's the top of the mountain as far as nobody will ever get a weirder one than that, I don't think. A question specifically for our times as we hearken back to the aforementioned pop star. Will Travis Kelce and Taylor Swift be unmarried, married to other people, married with a kid or kids or some other scenario? Ron Glasnap says married with a kid. Rick Morris says married with a kid, and Chris Galloway says divorced. Oh, ye cynic, ye.
Hey, I went DiMaggio Monroe, right?
Yeah.
I got 4 years for him to pop the question, her to say yes, then to actually have to deal with actual matrimony, two unabashed single people who are somewhat in many ways immature. And then somewhere along the lines, you know, cut two and a half years in going, well, we just want to announce our separation because, you know, I love Travis, but it's just not working out, yada, yada, yada. So I probably shouldn't have said divorce. It's probably not finalized. I should have said like separated, but anyway, okay. I'm sure the judges will allow it.
You know what? If it's either one of those, we'll allow it based on your qualification there. And I will say, too, if ever – I've been saying this all along. If ever there was a guy who's got that leather skin to where he ain't going to give a crap when the inevitable – and it'll be a flood of slanderous songs about him. If ever there'll be a guy that won't care, it'll be Travis Kelce. You know, we'll probably see a TikTok video of him dancing to one of the songs that MFs him. I predict that.
Well, I think my other take on it is that Jason Kelce got all the brains and all the sense of humor, and I don't know. I think actually Taylor Swift is a quite intelligent young lady, and I wonder how long the Travis and Taylor thing works.
We'll see, will we be subjected to another season of that intruding on our football games? Probably, but hey, optimism could always prevail here, right? The next question here, always got to get something in about the sport of kings. Which pro wrestler will spend the most days as World Heavyweight Champion for WWE Raw, WWE SmackDown, or AEW? Ron Glasnap says Bron Breakker. He was just called up to SmackDown from NXT. That could happen. if I remember correctly, I think Ronnie might have been the guy that got this right last time. He said Roman Reigns, who was the landslide winner in this thing. And Roman Reigns was, I think, at that time still out as a COVID precaution, or was about to be out anyways, because somebody recovering from leukemia, he was out for part of the pandemic. But I think Ron got that pick right last time. I'm going out on a limb here with Will Ospreay just joining AEW. I predict that he will win in Wembley Stadium at All In London this summer. And for your pick, it was no idea, Chris.
Yeah, I wanted to guess Nikolai Volkov, but I've been told that that probably was going to end up being wrong.
Well, the only guy watching Nikolai Volkov wrestle in person tonight is our aforementioned friend, the late, great Dave Adams. So if Dave is being subjected to the hideous work rate of Nikolai Volkov tonight, we have to watch that on the Peacock Network here if we want to see his old stuff.
Well, I hope he's watching that and Nikolai's tag team partner, the Iron Sheik.
That's right.
Really, you know, maybe work over the British Bulldogs. So,
well,
I have no idea if the British Bulldogs are dead. I have no idea.
Actually, yeah, at this point, they both are. So there is.
I thought one of them was, but I thought one was, but I actually, when I said that, I couldn't actually be sure if one or both were.
Well, now I'm going to look that up just to see, because Tom Billington, I mean, that's a guy that was like in hideous shape for a long time, and I could have sworn at some point. Yes, 2018, actually. So we're right about that. So. I'd rather that Dave was watching a British Bulldogs match because it would be great work rate and great entertainment for him. And, Ole Anderson, by the way, passing away in the last 24 hours, although there is copious speculation that he might have been headed to the opposite destination based on what a lot of people thought of him. So hopefully not for Ole's sake. But the next one here, what will be the percentage of smart and able TVs in the U.S.? So we did this the last time out here, and so coming into this, it was a baseline. So I'm going to give you another pick on this, Chris, because I forgot to tell you this. It was 86% as of right now. So Ron Glasnap initially said 63%. He revised it to 93% when I apprised him of that. I put down 96% on mine. You said 77%. So I'm sure you're not thinking it's going to go backwards. So anything over here?
No, I guess I had looked. So I had looked up, and the stat I had found was what percentage of people in 2023 own in the U.S. and smart enabled TV, and it was only 49%. Now not the same number. Like, so I was a little bit confused on, well, is this like, you know, like if there's a bar that owns 400 televisions, you know, a chain, and they're all smart.
Right.
I mean, I guess technically most TVs then are smart. I was kind of more tying it to the population. Was like,
okay.
You know, because again, you could have a mountain of televisions, but I, you know, to me, the more important thing is how many people have a smart enabled TV as a percentage.
Okay.
So that's what I was actually attempting to answer, because raw numbers of mass produced televisions, I would have guessed it would have been higher.
Okay.
But in this case, I was actually trying to peg it to, obviously, you know, televisions by themselves are irrelevant. It's what percentage of people have access to one is, to me, is what the actual, which is the more important number. So.
Okay. All right. Well, look, we'll grade you on that scale. We'll see if you're closer to what that number is than me and Ron are to the actual number. So that's how we'll do it. Closest to the flag here, so to speak. What will be the largest streaming service in terms of subscribers? Ron says YouTube TV, looking for a big leap there. I am going to go with the chalk of Netflix. You're going with a brave one like Ron. Although yours, to me, seems more plausible. Ron's is braver because I think Ron's is a bigger long shot. You're saying that Amazon will pass Netflix.
I considered YouTube, okay? But
okay.
Because they're not even in the top 10,
right.
At this point, I don't want to go there with it. I think eventually they very well could be. The next time we do this in 4 years, that might be my guess. Right now, I'm going to guess that Netflix continues to have, some issues with numbers of subscribers coming down a little bit. This will in turn affect their ability to, their growth. But here's the wrinkle on why I'm guessing Amazon passing Netflix. Are you ready? I think there's going to be two things, and we're going to get to two things. One, we're going to get to the AI question in a little bit later, and I think, as I have talked with you in a previous episode, and then ultimately, you know, we've talked off air about the rapid advancement of AI is going to allow someone to take a script, make a script, a la some of the stuff you and I have done, literally feed that in, create parameters, and have AI present you the first 10 episodes of your season of television. So right now, Netflix and all these other streaming services like Amazon that are creating original content, they've got to hire directors. They've got to find producers. They've got to get actors. They've got to get stage, you know, sound stages together. They got to do all these things. Well, a year from now, when AI can create real-looking people that you can't tell the difference of, you can create characters individually and then have AI with your script. And not only that, you don't have to go out into the middle of North Africa and shoot on scene, budget-wise, right?
Right.
If you can create television shows and put that, you know, you could literally, Rick Morris could sit there in his house and produce the first season of his television show with little to no cost. And you could put that out on YouTube. And if somebody finds it and your show goes viral, you're off and running. So I guess what I'm saying is, I think things like Netflix and the movie studios and the ones that are trying to create, especially the, like HBO with the television shows, they're about to run into something that even a year ago they didn't see coming. Because what happens when you can open up movie and show production the same way you do it now for YouTube does for things like people having like their own little television shows on YouTube, you know, podcasts and other things, in original entertainment that people attract to. So one, Ron is right. YouTube's going to see a skyrocket because of that, because that's the obvious platform. But then if AI advances as quickly as I think it's going to, you're going to see the first swing of people turning their scripts and their ideas into actual shows with no actual shooting, no actual actors, but no one will know the difference. And if that's the case, original content creators like Netflix are going to be in deep trouble. Now, you say to me, but Chris, Amazon is an original content creator. Wouldn't they also be in a lot of trouble with the same problem? Yes. But here's what Amazon, I think, is going to do here in the next year or two, because they have the capital to do it. I think that Amazon is likely to acquire another streaming service a la like a DirecTV stream and get into sort of the cable business. That's a way to buttress their streaming television options. So they're trying to, you know, they've gone out and they're like, hey, we're going to do some baseball games. Hey, we're doing the Thursday night NFL. What's the next obvious iteration to give value to being a Prime member is to go out and get somebody like what YouTube is doing with YouTube TV or DirecTV Stream and be like, listen, you're Amazon, you know, Prime for an extra $75, you get Amazon Stream TV, which is basically like a DirecTV Stream with all the channels and everything else, and you get it all through your Amazon. To me, that's like the obvious next business move for them, what they can do, and that will allow them to surpass in the next 4 years Netflix, because I don't think Netflix has the capital to become like a cable. But I think Amazon will be concerned about where the television market is going in general and streaming and all the competition. So what better than to just go out and buy one up? And then try to compete as just an original content or reselling movies to people. Why not become also my cable, you know, I say that in quotations, my cable provider.
Right. Well, that's a fascinating scenario, and that is going to tie into some of the opinion questions we're going to go to here in just a bit. We have one more true or false thing that we can all be graded on.
before that. And this is one that we agreed upon. So between February 29th, 24, and 28, will AI lead to a net job gain or job loss? Ron Glasnap, myself, Rick Morris, you, Chris Galloway, all saying a net job loss.
Yeah, I think with anything like this, I think in the very forefront, especially with the rapid nature of it, I think it's going to, in short term, result in a loss. I don't necessarily think that it results in a long-term loss of jobs, but I do think that the rapid nature of it and the sort of the dramatic nature of it, I think that AI in the next 4 years will result in people being replaced without being necessarily, I guess, you know, replaced on the job with, you know, more people because of the AI providing opportunities. I do think that in general, AI will be like all other, ultimately all other technology advancements in that it will result in eventually more jobs. And I say that because throughout human history, every time we've worried about significant technological shifts, history has shown that technology will create more opportunities than it displaces. But sometimes in the beginning, there's a negative, right, before the positive comes. And I just think the next 40 years is probably a negative. But then overall, it makes us all more productive. It allows us to not focus on some of the mundane. You automate tasks. It'll enhance human creativity and efficiency. So it opens up new, you know, generates new opportunities for even more things. So I think it allows us to reach new heights of creativity and innovation, but I think in the short term, it's probably going to result in a slight dip in jobs, and then there's a lagger there, and then there's a shift, and then it ends up in creating more jobs. If any of that makes sense, what I just said.
Yeah, no, I agree with that, and that's a thing where I think any kind of, again, AI advancement is moving so quickly that, like, if it was a year or two down the road where it was already creating new jobs after a lot of people got laid off, I don't know that we would be surprised, because it's moving so quickly. It has in the last less than a year and a half. But, yeah, I think we've all made the safe bet there. It's interesting that the last question that we had on the ones we could be scored on is the first it's the same dynamic as the first opinion question, in that we had, as we don't often have on this thing here, a consensus. Our first opinion question, there are five. One is, number one, will there be a significant number of driverless cars on the road? So at this point, we start including fellow FDH Lounge original dignitary Nate Noy, our FDH Director of Research. Nate says no. Ron Glasnap says no. I, Rick Morris, say no. You, Chris Galloway, say no.
Yeah, I don't think in the next 4 years we're going to see a significant number of those. I think the technology isn't quite there yet. There's a lot of challenging factors, i.e. the human interaction with those driverless cars is a real problem. It'd be one thing if all cars were driverless.
Right.
So I don't think in the next 4 years, and again, I'm going to say, you know, your significant number of driverless cars, I mean, I'm going to say that's in excess of 15% of the cars on the road. And so I kind of was like, well, what does he mean by significant, you know? And I kind of thought, okay, well, if it's double digits, 15% seems to me like that's the sort of significant threshold. I don't think it'll be anywhere near there.
Yeah, I don't think any of us thinks that's the case, especially with all the mishaps that have happened thus far with it. The second question, as far as what my answer is, the spoiler for that would be that myself and FDH Lounge dignitary Ben Chu did a segment recently on this where we did proclaim that this now appears to be the future. So I answered yes to the next one, but everybody else did not. Agree or disagree? The new ESPN, Fox Sports, Warner Brothers Discovery sports-oriented skinny bundle with streaming add-ons will be the dominant force in both cable and streaming that every other entity will have to reckon with in some form or fashion. And you're already seeing that Peacock and Paramount might mount their own response to that. Nate Noy with the colorful response of absolutely false. ESPN Disney is a woke dying company just like Budweiser. Okay, thank you for that, Nate. Ron Glasnap merely says no. He disagrees. I say yes, and you, Chris Galloway, say no. So I'm voted off the island on this particular one.
Yeah, I mean, again, I think that these types of things beget other moves, right?
Okay.
I already just outlined my guess on Amazon, what they might do in this landscape. This is the kind of thing that I think accelerates their interest in doing something like that. And I, like you said, some of the other streaming services are going to love to do the same thing. This is almost like, you know, the Big Ten and the SEC racing to see who can, you know, gobble up the most teams, right?
Right.
There's always a counterbalance. So that's why I don't think that it will be the dominant force. I'm not buying that at all.
Interesting. Okay. The next one here. What will be the greatest technological advance that predominantly involves AI? Nate, with another colorful answer, AI is polluted by woke programming. It also will fade and not grow. It's garbage that can't be trusted. Ron Glasnap, boy, talk about a 180. Ron Glasnap says curing cancer. So you couldn't get further from one to the other. My thought sense was just generally that, like, helping with diseases. I don't know that it'll cure cancer, because I have my bitter conspiracy theory that, like, everybody that's on the verge of killing cancer gets a blow dart to the neck from big tech's hired hitmen. So I don't know if it's going to cure cancer, but I do think there will be some significant disease mitigation. And you answered medical, so I guess you and I are on the same page there.
Yeah, I didn't go with anything bold like it's going to cure cancer in the next 4 years. I don't believe that, but I do think that where AI, and this ties into things like jobs too, where I think AI is going to see big advancements when it's applied will be in the medical area, whether it's diagnosis, probably first with diagnosis, right?
Okay.
That is analyzing volumes of data about somebody and determining all these different factors and plugging it in and saying, well, this is the most likely thing. This person's likely to have cancer. Look here. Oh, look, there's the cancer. Or, oh, look, you know, this person, we can't figure out what it is. Well, I put all 73 data points together, and they've got, you know, they have green monkey disease. Hey, look, AI was right. They have green monkey disease. As far as jobs go, radiologists, you know, I have to pay somebody to sit and look at you know, radiology screenings, you know. You just put them into the computer, and AI processes them in seconds. One right after another, and says cancer, no cancer, clean, not clean, cancer, no cancer. That guy has cancer of this. No, all good, nothing. That radiology is clean. Oh, this one I found a node. Oh, this one, boom, second, boom, 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 boom. That's where that affects jobs. I think that's what I mean. Medical is it's going to advance prognostication, determination of illnesses. In the next 4 years, that's the most rapid development. Looking at things like, you know, x-rays and other stuff, that not needing a human to do that stuff. You have to go, oh, well, they've got this, or, oh, they have that, or, oh, there's a blockage in a random vein. I can see it, you can't. I've detected it, blah, blah, blah. I think that's the biggest, when I say medical, it replaces some jobs. It makes it quicker and more thorough for us to eliminate human error to find, you know, and diagnose and prognosticate people's illnesses, which ultimately results in better health care, better end results for people, finding cancer and things earlier, that kind of thing. I think, to me, when someone I see medical, that's what I'm talking about.
Okay. I mean, that makes a lot of sense, and I think, these are the lines where, again, there's already a lot of that going on there as far as in the medical industry. Like you said, it's going to be the techs, it's going to be people like that that are going to be deemed expendable, unfortunately for them. What will be the greatest technological advance that does not predominantly involve AI? Nate Noy says, I feel something in medicine about to happen, like curing some disease. Ironic in light of what we just said about AI and medicine. Ron Glasnap says everything will involve AI or computer tech one way or another. For me, I don't expect to be right on this, but I have to stick to it. I'm a homer for it over a period of time. Jetpacks. I think science will finally get off its ass and deliver us jetpacks. I expect to have my jetpack in the next 4 years. Now, are you disappointed if I...
In 4 years, I look forward to talking to you about how you're not getting a jetpack.
Well, yes, this is the evergreen of our February 29th segments here. Your answer was hard to say because any further advancement will probably involve AI helping make it happen. I'll say robotics. So you were thinking similar to Ron on this, that it's going to be hard to weed out AI from any advancements that do happen.
Yeah, there won't be any advancements moving forward that don't in some, even in a small way, involve AI. You can just throw
okay.
that right out the window.
Okay.
I think that the area I went with is robotics. I think you see like the Boston Dynamics, you know, they went from the basic rudimentary robot to now they've got robots that can like dance and they don't fall over. And, you know, it of course, you know, frightens all of us with our dystopian thoughts about killer robots merging with AI that, you know, that can't be stopped. Look, I've said it for years. You've heard me. I think there's going to be a lot of rapid change in a lot of spaces, and robotics is one of them. Some of the labor problems that we're having, robotics is the thing that's replacing people, right? Amazon's looking to make like 40% of their, you know, quote-unquote workforce robotics. Robotics is going to be the thing that I tell people all the time, I'm 51 years old. When I'm 80, I'm not going to assisted living. My robot is going to, that my daughter purchases for me is going to move in with me. So like nursing homes will go the way of a dodo, right?
Okay.
My robot is going to, you know, is going to come in, you know, Jeeves, right? And he's going to spend all day with me. He's going to talk to me, right? So that's where eventually you'll get the merging of robotics and AI. He's going to make sure I'm taking my pills. He's going to help me with the dishes and chores. If I fall down, he's going to pick me up. He's going to keep me company all day. That's eventually, if you listen to stuff the Japanese are doing in robotics, we are moving that way rapidly. And so that's why I say things like in the future, you know, a fire department, half your fire department is going to be, you know, or more is going to be robots. And you say, well, that's crazy, right? No, it's not crazy. You think about it, you've got to have all these men on shift in a fire station. Well, if you've got working robotics, right, that can have, like, instead of having 8 men on a shift available sitting around in the fire station, you got 2 and 6 robots, right? So you got 2 humans and 6 robots, and if there's a fire, the robots carry the hose. They do a lot of this the labor. You send them into the burning building. You know, they lift the car off the person who's, you know, that's been hurt in the auto rollover. They are, and while you have a human there making some sort of management decisions on the spot, right? Like, that's
right.
The future of stuff like that. It's coming fast. Now, do I think we're there yet, like what I just described, in 40 years? No. But I think the advancements in robotics in the next 4 years will be the second most advanced thing other than AI.
Well, yeah, and there's that, and then when you're talking about the human-like capacities of robots here, let's also mention that for some of the optimists out there who feel that, like, robotic sex dolls will be a thing that can replace other aspects of interpersonal connection here, the whole thing of, like, oh, it's going to get more lifelike on the one hand, you might gain that, but you're also going to lose the whole thing of, like, oh, this sex doll will never be a pain in my ass like my significant other. So the good Lord giveth, the good Lord taketh away as they get more lifelike, Chris.
Well, I mean, you're already seeing that in some regard.
Sure.
And it's going to change the human dynamic in terms of people being alone or choosing some level of artificial companion. I mean, you already have, because of technological advancements, I believe, things like social media and other things and the internet, you already have, and you're seeing in places like Japan, and you're starting to see it in this country as well, huge swaths, percentages of like young men who have no romantic lives at all.
Right.
You know, they're still, you know, they're getting into their 20s and 30s, and they have absolutely, and I don't mean like, hey, it's like 6%. The numbers are starting to get a little frightening, right? I mean, we're talking, you know, hey, it's like 24%, 30%, like the projections are sad, where it's like they won't ever have a girlfriend or they won't have a wife. And the flip side is it's the same thing is going to happen with women as well.
Sure.
The reality is that's kind of where we're going as a species. Japan right now is kind of ahead of that. You know, the numbers of young people involved in relationships or even a sexual relationship is dropping like a rock.
Mm-hmm.
And it's being replaced by other things, right? Video
right.
games, internet, even things like friendships, right? The number of American males that don't have currently, like under the age of 40, I thought I read something, and this was like 6 months ago, that don't have an actual friend is like 19-20%. Like
really?
A person who's like their real, I mean like their real friend. Like they can
oh my
call,
God.
They can talk to. You know what I mean? Like that's there for them, and they're there for them, and they hang out with regularly. Like it's we've got some really bizarre dynamics going on, and unfortunately, things like robotics and AI will only make those human connections more distant.
Well, wow. I mean, as somebody who is in the Bill Gates top 1%. As far as quantity and quality of friends, I'll have to remember to be a little more grateful for that. 19 or 20% don't have one. Are you kidding me? I mean, that's pretty bad. But
well,
I
and again, I don't know if you saw a few years ago there was a great movie that was kind of about this topic.
Mm.
It was called Her. Her. Did you see it?
Oh, yeah. I heard about it. I heard a lot about it. I got to check it out.
You should watch it. It's what's her name from the Avengers? The actress who plays the voice of the sort of cyber female. I think it's Joaquin Phoenix plays the man who sort of falls in love with his AI, you know,
right.
computer voice.
Uh-huh.
We are not far from that scenario, and I really strongly, you really should watch that movie.
Yeah.
Scarlett Johansson, that's it. She plays the voice. You really ought to watch that movie to understand, sadly, where we're going for a lot of people in terms of our species, because
yeah.
they want someone that will just listen to them, right? They want
yeah.
to feel connected, even if it's artificial.
That is pretty sad. Well, in terms of all the picks we've been making about the things that will happen between February 29th, 24, and 28, our last question, fittingly enough, goes to the notion of whether any of this will matter, whether we'll all still be here to be able to do another show next time. The question, our final question, rate the percentage chance that this is our last February 29th time capsule because there will be a nuclear war before February 29th, 2028. Nate Noy says 0.0001% chance, but he is still far more of a pessimist than Ron Glasnap, who says zero. You used a word a couple minutes ago that certainly applies to me. I am the resident dystopian in the FDH lounge, and based on events over the last, one could say 2 years, but in particular the last 6 months or so, I have upped it to 35%. Chance of that happening, and you, Chris, are saying 1%. Yeah.
Well, I didn't really consider getting into the point zero and all that. I just kind of I considered zero and then one. Like I was like, well, I'm not going to get into.
You're the second biggest dystopian of the four of us. How does that feel?
Well, that's probably the case. Here's what I would say to you. Some of that is, and I dissected your question. Nuclear war. I mean, this falls into my original prediction in 2014 that by the end of 2024, Vladimir Putin would use a nuclear weapon. So I am almost out of real estate on that prediction.
It feels like he's scrambling to meet your deadline, though.
he's understood the assignment, and he knows how much I hate to be wrong.
I wish he let you
be. That kind of scenario, I'm guessing, like, tactical nuclear weapons on the battlefield, that kind of thing.
Okay.
I will say in that case, I'm going to be wrong, because he's not making the progress needed in Ukraine. Ukraine is not capable of making the progress to push him to have to use a weapon like that. So I'm here to tell you that I'm not, that prediction is going to prove that the decade will close since that prediction, and it will prove to have not been accurate.
Again,
because Ukraine was not able to turn the tide and push further last year, despite the horrific losses of the Russian armed services, and they are mind-bogglingly huge, not only in a human cost, but in terms of the numbers of tanks, planes, et cetera. I mean, they are trying to replace, but they are moving their economy towards a war footing. I mean, they are rapidly moving towards that. And I don't think, as I told somebody the other day, we're probably already in World War III and don't yet realize it, in the same way that the first two to two and a half years of World War II. You know, we were in World War II, and then it expanded when it was just Germany, you know, marching into Poland and that sort of thing, and England was fighting alone. The reality is we're probably already in it, and we don't realize it. So that comes back to your question. The way I process this is, what are the odds of a nuclear war? Could there be some exchange of a nuclear weapon or something, Israel, Iran, Russia, Ukraine, you know, shit, India, Pakistan,
right.
Indiana, Michigan. Yes, right. Indiana nukes Michigan. You know, that sort of thing. That's why I put it at 1%. I know in your head, you're envisioning all the warheads are flying. The earth is being flattened with nuclear weapons.
Right.
We're all glowing, you know, yada, yada, yada. I don't see it that way. I guess it really comes down to, how do you define a nuclear war? Is it a few warheads being lobbed about, damaging some regional, local area? You know, that's why I put that at 1%. Because we are a little bit more unstable than we have ever have been in recent history.
Yes.
And we have more actors and bad actors with access to nuclear weapons. And so therefore, I have to move the odds, you know, in that direction from zero, which is why I settled on a 1% in the next 4 years. I still think, more times than not, the rational actor model does apply. I mean, even lunatic, you know, Khomeini and those types in, like, Iran aren't interested in nuking their children. But you never know. And again, I don't think things are bad enough for Russia to force Putin to have to do something. So that's why I came up with that answer.
My last point on this would be just that what I've been struck by, and particularly since, and again, if we are in World War III, then I guess the Middle East would be front two that opened up, of there have been things that have happened that to me have been reminiscent of the start of World War I, of just like, because you sit there and you say rational actors and everything like that, but then something happens that nobody could have imagined. I don't think anybody saw the whole thing with the Houthis, with the shipping lanes thing happening. Now apparently they're cutting undersea cables to Europe. So, like, there have been things like that. And then, again, if something happens where, if there is any kind of attack on Iran to where they start firing hypersonic missiles across the Middle East, which I understand are damn near impossible to stop, then Israel's probably going to nuke them. So what happens with them? So it's like they're just the unseen things, like what's around the next horizon, that's what keeps me up at night, because it's the things of, like, as you look at it now, like, all things being equal, yes. I mean, even Iran wouldn't want to start a big war with Israel, and probably vice versa, and Putin might be restrained on this point or that point or whatever. But with some of these sabotage attacks that have happened inside Russia, what happens the next time? And I think a lot of that has probably been Ukraine with the drones. I mean, what happens if they can launch a really big attack in Russia to where Putin's just like, screw it, we're going to drop a nuke on them? You know what I mean? Like, we can't know the effects of things that haven't happened yet that we actually can't foresee. That's the thing that really bothers me and reminds me of the start of World War One.
Yeah, I get what you're saying, although I think the start of World War One was a little more defined and foreseeable based on treaties and whatnot. First of all, like, Iran doesn't have a hypersonic missile. Even the Russians don't. What
they
the
don't?
Russians claim is, well, they claim they have these Kinzhal hypersonic missiles, but we've taken them out with Patriots. They're sort of the hypersonic missile thing is a bit of a, not to make a pun, but sort of, it's a lot more hype, hyper, than reality. The reality is that like an intercontinental ballistic missile, although maybe not moving as quite as fast, because of the trajectory that it attacks, et cetera, is like is it would be nearly as effective as in theory a hypersonic missile. So there's the hypersonic thing is a lot of hype. You thought the actual people in that field, a la Raytheon and that kind of thing, and look, the U.S. hasn't finished developing one yet. The Russians have kind of created one, and they're calling it a hypersonic missile, but it's not really, not the way we would define it in the U.S. military.
Okay.
So, first of all, Iran doesn't have that.
That's good. That's good to know.
They are close to developing a nuclear weapon, though. We know that.
Yeah, true.
They're inching towards it. They are, you know, they are a question mark. But you also haven't mentioned China with Taiwan.
Right. That's a big one.
And to me, that's a bigger variable in some ways than Iran.
Sure.
But China has its own problems. I mean, Xi has discovered that he has real rot in the middle of his officer corps, general and admiral corps.
Mm-hmm.
So he has concerns about the competency of his own armed forces. And this matter with Russia and Ukraine has them reanalyzing their capacities. You throw in the fact that warfare is dramatically changing. I mean, the most interesting thing about this war between Russia and Ukraine is the strategists have to completely start to reanalyze some things, right? I mean, the cheap drones, the volume of cheap drones flooding the battlefield between Russia and Ukraine, and in many ways becoming the most important weapon either one of them have, is amazing. Right. You know, the cheap drone that is able to just hover above troops can't hide. You can't hide with drones constantly in the air, hundreds of them at any, you know, in a battlefield all the time going. You can't hide troop movements anymore. It is a bad scenario to be infantry now with drones. You can't move your guys at night. They can see you. You move your guys during the day. They see you. Oh, they see you. They drop a grenade on you from 300 feet in the air and kill you. Like, the drone thing is really, really going to change modern warfare. Drones are now as important as tanks.
Yeah. Definitely.
And so the military that figures that out, and that is the one thing Russia has going for it right now, is that they're investing in drones, they're learning how to incorporate drones, and they're taking away real-world lessons on drone usage and combating drones. So obviously the next phase of combat is then who can engage in electronic warfare to jam the signals that control the drones, right? That's the
True.
Next step.
Yeah.
That is a whole wild card that's like going to change warfare completely. And you're already seeing it where Ukraine flies a mid-sized drone 300 miles and, you know, blows up a MiG sitting in an airfield in Russia. And the Russians have no defenses to it, right? I mean, like, it's
True.
Crazy.
Yeah.
So anyway, I guess all that being said, we could talk for hours about some of these changes in terms of the geopolitical, you know, war structure, in individual tactics within war. What I do know is if your 35%, I think is outlandishly high.
Okay.
But I also know that if you're right and I'm wrong, it won't matter anyway, because it's not like you're gonna have the opportunity to rub my nose in it. So
yeah,
I feel very confident in my percentage.
Well, when we're sitting side by side with Dave Adams, I can spike the football. But this is not one that I would ever want to spike the football on. I don't want to be right. I don't want to see the things that I'm seeing. But you know, we will have to see.
Is the football reference a pun to the football that the Secret Service guy carries around behind the president?
It might as well be. I will be spiking the nuclear football, so to speak, after having been right about war. So
nah, we're not all going to get blown up and whatnot. It's not happening.
Well,
you know, I don't think you need to worry about that.
I hope not. The only constant always is that we'll be back in 4 years to assess how we did previously and make our assessments for the next time, our predictions. And I'm going to say this, and it's a thing where, again, you know, 4 years ago we did it. There was that, as I said, great apprehension because we didn't know how COVID was going to affect these things. We knew it was going to affect all of the things we talked about a lot, and it did. And this time just seems like an almost uniquely sort of crappy point in the world. I mean, hopefully, here's the thing. If we haven't blown ourselves up from four years from now, I mean, I'd like to think it could only get better than this 4 years from now. If we're all still here, hopefully that's a sign that things are better and we have more reason to be optimistic about the future.
I think that, as you know, I tend to be an optimist on human progress, It is admittedly not a straight line. And
sure.
I think if there is going to be one thing that becomes our look back moment where we talk about, wow, what came with that pandemic? To your point, it may be the discussion of, you know, in 4 years, are we looking back going, well, Chris, now that we're really into year six of World War III, you were really right. We were in the middle of it, and we didn't realize it. We were already in the midst of World War III, and we just didn't know it. Let's hope that I'm wrong on that point.
I truly hope so. But, again, as always, it'll be an amazing segment that we do, just like this one and just like the previous three. Thank you very much for your participation in this. Chris?
Hey, I love it. Always fun to do. And a happy leap day to everyone.
Absolutely. Happy leap day, everybody. Thank you so much, Chris Galloway, for being a constant in our February 29th time capsule segment. As per always, this is our fourth one that we just did. Thank you, everybody, for checking out FDH Lounge Mini Episode 1715.